Okay, the two major social issues that faced the newly independent countries of North and South America, and the Caribbean in this case, were the abolition of slavery and the mass immigration of Europeans and Asians. Let's talk first about the abolition movements, though. The ideals of the independence movements of the newly independent countries of North and South America really contradicted this whole institution of slavery. Despite this, slavery continued in many of the areas, including, of course, the United States, Brazil, and much of the Caribbean. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the Caribbean did not declare its independence at the same time as the Spanish and Portuguese colonies of the continent or the British colonies of the North American continent, largely because of the Haitian Revolution. The whites on the islands in the Caribbean were scared that if they attempted to declare their independence, they would not be able to control their slave population, and ultimately they would face the same fate as the whites of the French colony of Saint Domingue, which ultimately became Haiti. So the story is a little bit different in the Caribbean. But let's start with the continent, and actually let's start with the British, because the British were the first to act. The British outlawed the slave trade in 1807. They ended their participation in the slave trade in 1807. That's a year you really ought to remember, the end of the slave trade, 1807, because the slave trade was a really important part of the history of this period, and the slave trade itself ends in 1807. The British used treaties and the power of the British Navy, which is at this point the strongest in the world, to really forcibly end the actual slave trade. They signed treaties with most of the major importers of slaves, including the United States and Brazil, effectively ending the slave trade's legality, and then used the British Navy to enforce these new agreements. Effectively ending the slave trade, really, by the 1830s, though, it continued to some extent up until the 1850s with some smuggling of slaves into Brazil. But by the 1850s, the slave trade, the transport of slaves across the Atlantic Ocean, was over. The British then outlawed slavery itself in 1833. Okay, so again, let's review these dates. In 1807, the British end their participation in the slave trade, and then by 1850 completely squashed the trade altogether so that there is no transport of slaves across the Atlantic. And then in 1833, the British outlaw slavery in their colonies. Now, in most cases, as I talk about the outlawing of slavery in the colonies, it isn't an immediate act. It's not like one day these people are free and the next day they're not. In most cases, it's a gradual process. What happens is the slaves are granted their freedom, but they're required to continue to work for their masters for a fixed number of years. Or they'll say that all persons born after a certain date are born free. It's generally speaking a gradual process. Though in most cases, whatever specifications the law set out to end slavery never were carried out till the very end. So, for example, if in one case the government said that slaves were free, but they had to continue to work for their masters for the next 18 years, generally it only lasted maybe 5 years. And then by that point, the agreement was over and the slaves were in fact, completely free. So the British are the first to act. The United States acts early on in 1808. The northern states outlaw slavery, and the United States ends its participation in the slave trade. So the United States was one of the first countries to join with the British in ending its participation in the slave trade. The northern states actually outlaw slavery in 1808. This movement is largely led by women. Women and free blacks were the leaders of the abolition movement in the United States. And ultimately, as you should already know, slavery is officially over in 1864 with the end of the Civil War in the United States. Let's talk next about the Caribbean. As I said, the Caribbean islands did not declare their independence or did not fight for their independence from their colonial rulers, largely as a result of the Haitian Revolution. So when slavery was abolished in the Caribbean, it was largely done by the European colonial rulers. We already talked about the British outlawed slavery in their colonies in 1833. Next was the French. In 1848, the French outlawed slavery. They were followed by the Dutch, who outlawed slavery in their colonies in 1863. The Spanish outlawed slavery in their colonies between 1873 and 1886. It was a little bit more of a gradual process in the Spanish colonies of the Caribbean. And I also described the fact that in most situations, these laws were actually executed in a more gradual process rather than an immediate end. The slaves were required to either stay on with their masters for a fixed number of years as like apprentices and are supposed to be like being trained, or as wage laborers. And in some cases, the government compensated the slave owners for their loss when the slaves were freed. The last country to abolish slavery was Brazil. It's logical that they were the last because they were so dependent on slave labor in the sugarcane plantations. Slavery was not outlawed in Brazil until 1888. This was largely a result of the fact that slaves joined the Brazilian army in its war against Paraguay. Remember I mentioned earlier that Uruguay, Argentina, and Brazil had formed an alliance to fight Paraguay. Many slaves had actually joined the Brazilian army. When they joined the army, they gained the respect of the army commanders. And as a result, the army really ended its support of slavery. And the army was the people who were largely responsible for capturing runaway slaves. So without the army in support of slavery, it was hard to really maintain the institution. So ultimately, it was outlawed in 1888. Okay, let's go ahead and transition to the next slide, please. Okay, the next thing we need to talk about is immigration. With the abolition of the slave trade, the plantation owners needed a new source of labor, and much of this new labor came in the form of indentured servants. So remember, we had talked about indentured servitude before. Poor Europeans who immigrated to the Caribbean to work on the tobacco plantations. That ended when the tobacco shifted north, although the indentured servants still continued to come to Virginia. They no longer went to the Caribbean. Instead, they were replaced by African slaves. Well, when the slave trade was abolished, they still needed laborers. Because remember, the slave population did not really reproduce fast enough to provide the necessary labor. There had to be sort of a constant inflow of new laborers. So they reestablished the institution of indentured servitude. But now, instead of bringing Europeans, they were bringing Asians, Chinese, Japanese, and Indians, and then to a lesser extent, Southeast Asians, Indonesians. But there was also a huge increase in European immigration into these newly independent countries. As we know, the first large group of immigrants, the very first, of course, are Europeans, the European colonists. The next group that comes in are the African slaves. Okay, but when we end African slavery, we get this new influx of people, Europeans and Asians. There is a massive European immigration. First from Western Europe, and then mostly from Southern Europe, from Italy and Spain, and then Eastern Europe. Okay, so where the people are coming from in Europe changes. Early on, it's Western Europeans. Later on, it's Southern and Eastern Europeans. To give you an idea of just how many people we're talking about, in the United States, in 1830, 600,000 Europeans immigrated. In 1840, 1.5 million Europeans immigrated. In 1880, 2.5 million Europeans immigrated. And in 1890, 5.2 million Europeans moved to the United States. Okay? So let's think about this. In 1830, about 500,000 Europeans moved from Europe to the United States. In 1890, 5.2 million Europeans moved from Europe to the United States. So just a massive increase in immigration. That's just the United States. The same thing was happening all over the Americas. Canada was getting massive immigration. Argentina particularly got a huge number of European immigrants. Argentina was a hot destination for European immigrants. The United States, Canada, and Argentina were probably the top destinations for Europeans emigrating to the Americas. In 1910, 30% of the Argentinian population was foreign-born. Okay? Again, 30% of the Argentinian population was foreign-born, meaning they were not born in Argentina. This is in 1910. So this gives you an idea of the scale of immigration. Now, these are the Europeans, but meanwhile, you have a huge number of Chinese coming in as well. Chinese coming in as indentured servants, but also just immigrating as free immigrants, just like the Europeans were. To give you an idea of how many Chinese were coming, between 1849 and 1875, 100,000 Chinese immigrated into Peru. 120,000 immigrated into Cuba. 50,000 immigrated into Canada, and 300,000 immigrated into the United States. So that's pretty amazing. So that was between 1849 and 1875. We're talking about 100,000 Chinese immigrating into Peru, 120,000 into Cuba, 50,000 into Canada, and 300,000 into the United States. The railroads of the western United States were built by Chinese immigrants. Give you an idea of what I'm talking about here, look at the picture on the right-hand side of your screen. This is Chinatown in Havana, Cuba, today. Okay? That's a modern photograph. Actually, it's not quite modern as you... Well, it's probably pretty close to modern, actually. It's not quite modern, but it was taken very recently. In the last probably 30 years, the photo was taken. So this is a photograph of Chinatown in Havana, Cuba. Now, that's same Chinatown still there today. I found a great photo of a Chinese Cuban on the internet that was just like a family photo. A lot of the Chinese from Cuba have actually since immigrated to the United States, but Cuba today still has, I believe, something like 1-7% of their population is of Chinese descent. Okay, and then Indian immigration. Large numbers of Indians immigrate to the United States. 500,000 Indians immigrate to the Caribbean and to South America. 200,000 arrive in Guyana alone, which is in South America. Guyana is just above Brazil in South America. Today, 50% of the population of Suriname is of Indian descent, of East Indian descent, like India Indians. And then about 30% of the population of Guyana is of Indian descent. 50% of the population of Suriname, or actually I think it's larger than that, is Hindu. Okay, the largest concentration of Hindus outside of India is in South America. You can see this in the picture on the left-hand side of your screen. This is obviously a much, much older picture from the era when the immigrants were actually arriving, the 1800s, the late 1800s. This is a photograph of a Hindu temple in Trinidad. Okay. So this is a late 1800s photograph of a Hindu temple in Trinidad. Trinidad is an island in the Caribbean. Again, these people entered the Caribbean to work on sugarcane plantations as indentured servants. This massive immigration spurred what we call nativist movements. These are movements, basically movements, anti-immigration movements, who see this massive immigration as a threat to identity, to the identity of these newly independent countries. By, of course, this point, they're not so newly independent anymore. The United States have been independent for 100 years by now. But nonetheless, we get these really strong movements that are opposed to immigration. They are particularly racist in their ideology, focusing largely on discrimination of Asians. Asians were seen as a sub-race, as inferior, and many of the countries of North and South America banned the immigration of Asian immigrants. The United States passed the Chinese Exclusion Act in 1882, which banned the immigration of Chinese into the United States. Canada did something very similar by charging a head tax on all Chinese immigrants in 1886, which effectively effectively ended the immigration of Chinese into Canada. Mexicans and Peruvians also passed laws limiting the immigration of Chinese, or there were massive anti-Chinese movements in both Mexico and Peru. But it wasn't just Asians that faced major discrimination. Southern Europeans, particularly Italians, faced major discrimination in Argentina. Social scientists in Argentina actually attempted to prove that Italians were more prone to crime than any other group, that they had some sort of natural inclination to be criminal. The Italians faced major discrimination in the United States. They were believed to all be anarchists and communists, bringing in these sort of foreign ideologies that threatened American democracy and threatened Argentinian democracy. So major racism spurred as a result of this massive immigration. But what it ultimately really did was completely transform these countries. Transformed America, transformed the countries of South America. It created multiracial societies where we have our languages heavily influenced by the arrival of these immigrants. Languages as diverse as Yiddish, which is a Jewish language, Chinese, of course, all the European languages influencing the language that we speak and the languages of South America. The dominant language of Suriname is Caribbean Hindustani. It's, I think, something like 40%, 50% of the population of Suriname speaks Caribbean Hindustani. If you just even take that word apart, you can see what I'm talking about. It's a language that blends the dialects of the Caribbean, which of course would be European and African, blends of European and African languages with the languages of Northern India. So it's pretty amazing stuff. Okay, so we are done for today.